This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kadun. With me, Joyce Goh and Brian Fernandez. Time to look at the top business stories that are animating discussions across the Klang Valley, especially among those involved in business. Now, we're almost at the end of the earnings season for the end of June. Results for banks, for the banking sector, the bulk of banks have already submitted their report cards, with CIMB being the latest. It looks like banks are generally showing a good set of numbers.
Yes, Sharad. It looks like their results are all showing top-line growth, and they're seeing profits expanding as well. Some of them are also seeing improvement in their cost-to-income ratio. So we reached out to banking analysts. And what have they to say, Brian?
Well, okay, let's give a local bank perspective first. An analyst from a local bank said that basically results have been in line with expectations. Operating environment is seen as challenging, but with subdued loan growth. However, good thing is, margins are holding up well amid some compression. He also sees some signs of stress on asset quality with sporadic corporate and household impaired loans. But overall, there are indications that the second half of the year loan pipeline is good. But there's some caution there, obviously, Joyce, but positive news moving forward. You have a foreign bank's perspective.
Yes, we also reached out to an analyst at a foreign bank, and he noted that the bright spot for this time round of results that they've seen thus far is in NIM stability among banks. So that's in net interest margins for banks. He noted that that seems to have stabilized, so that's a good thing. And he also noted that loan growth seems to be weak, in his opinion, and provisions are mostly higher quarter on quarter. So some of the results we're looking at, the CIMB that saw an increase in 35% in their net profit up to 2.28 billion. This is for their first half 2017 results.
In fact, we have CIMB CEO Tunku Dato Sri Zafrul Aziz. He says this about his own bank's performance.
Our net profit grew by 35.3% year on year. Our net profit for the first half is 2.28 billion ringgit. Our growth contributed by, among others, strong loan growth from all segments, improvement in net interest margins, better performing capital markets, and regional commercial banking business also improved.
That was CIMB CEO Tunku Zafrul Aziz speaking about the bank's performance. Well, what about the question of oil and gas loans, and does it still cloud the banking sector?
Well, and that's a good point, Sharad, because that has been the elephant in the room for a lot of banks. But Tunku Zafrul came out and said that basically CIMB's exposure to oil and gas sector is only 2.5% of its overall loan book. And the bulk of the exposure is in Malaysia, and it's 85% of that 2.5%. So it's even the Singapore exposure, therefore, is very, very, very small. However, if you look at Hong Leong, for example, they increased their gross impaired loan by 26% year on year, primarily due to the fact that they wanted to classify a shipping oil and gas loan as impaired, even though it's still performing. But let's put that into perspective. The gross impaired loans ratio is only 0.96% at the end of 2.7. So they're very, very conservative.
Right. I think the oil and gas thing is looming around, but it's mainly for banks across the causeway in Singapore. In Malaysia, they're still okay. Banking analysts say that it is more of property development that they think on loans books that could be impacted by, that could be a cause of concern, but not so much oil and gas yet.
Okay, moving on, RAM Rating Services says that the upcoming elections, Malaysia, that is the GE14, might further inflate the government's already huge contingent liabilities. They reckon this is largely due to the rollout of large infrastructure projects and the increase in supply of affordable housing, all of which are said to be linked to GE14.
Yes, and that's a good point, Sharad, because all these large infrastructure projects have to be financed, and they're all financed by debt. Affordable housing is a key political issue, and that's also then spilling over into more and more borrowings in that area. Now, debt for this increases your favorite word, hefty contingent liabilities for the government. Now, government guaranteed debt is something in the region of 15.2% of GDP, according to REM, as at the end of 2016. But Bank Negara's figure, which is a more concrete figure, 195 billion ringgit guaranteed by the government.
REM's projection of the Malaysian economy, they're saying that in the lead up to the 14th general election that is due by August next year, the construction activity is expected to remain robust. So they're forecasting about 6.5% there. And a higher fuel price and the effects of weaker earnings exchange rate is expected to drive inflation up to 3.8% in this for this year.
I guess what is not being said here is that affordable housing is seen as a kind of maybe an inducement. It's a kind of reward for the public, and then maybe you'll get votes in an exchange. Is that the assumption that's being made?
Yes, because that is a hot button now among voters.
And then, of course, the question of infrastructure projects. Is that because they're seen as prestige projects and therefore also going to gain political capital for the government of the day? I mean, otherwise, what is the connection between an infrastructure project and this particular election?
Sure, right. It's also about pump priming the economy. Basically, money is flowing in. Contractors have money. It flows all round down the value chain. So given that scenario as well, RAM also talked about capital inflows. Now, RAM observed a normalization of investors' risk appetite, which had deteriorated in 2016. So we've seen that in the numbers in terms of investments and capital inflows into Malaysia. RAM also says that it envisions steady momentum for the 10 ASEAN countries for 2017, following a very good start, and also there, with the exception of India. And Asia's dependent on trade and investment from China gives a little bit of contagion risk, obviously, for the region, and especially in the context of the 20th anniversary of the Asian financial crisis, we've got to think about that contagion risk.
Okay, moving on, because tropical storm Harvey or Hurricane Harvey is said to be, it's kind of grabbing headlines, is likely to rank as one of America's costliest natural disasters. The storm has stunted businesses and halted growth in Texas, which accounts for half of the petroleum and gas exports of the U.S. Brian, what do we have in terms of this picture? We already see, the city being submerged. It's extraordinary pictures coming out of there, but the economic knock-on effects of this are going to be staggering. Have they started to calculate those costs?
Yes. So as you mentioned, I think that the physical devastation and the impact on people's lives are tremendous. However, the economic impact is quite severe. Texas is one-tenth of the U.S. economy. It contributes something in the region of $600 billion in economic activity, and it accounts for half of petroleum, oil, and gas exports in the U.S. Now, Moody's estimates that the damage will be between something in the region of $50 to $60 billion at this time, although that will take months to fully quantify. The storm, however, is expected to impact 2.2 billion barrels of day. Per day in refining capacity. And I think, Joyce, you have some numbers on that.
I'm looking at the U.S. Gulf Coast. It is home to nearly half of the U.S. refining capacity. So demand is down because the refineries are shutting down. And so the Port Arthur refining complex in Texas is the largest in the U.S. and the second largest in the world. And this, no doubt, will impact gasoline and chemical prices. The affected refineries represent about 12% of the nation's refining capacity, raising concerns in the increase in gasoline prices.
Yes. Go ahead, Sharad. Now, gasoline prices, as you mentioned, Joyce, futures soared on Monday. Oil futures also dropped on Monday due to the storm. Brent, however, only lost 52 cents or 1% to $51 a barrel. And also, as of noon on Monday, prices were down just over 3%.
We also have the question of insurance and insurance claims going to come after this devastating storm in terms of loss of property and such. What do we understand about the impact of this on the insurance sector?
Well, yesterday, Hannover Re told Reuters that the damage Harvey has brought is projected to be well below impact of 2005's Katrina. That was about $80 then in 2005.
And well, 80 billion is what, about 340 or so billion ringgit?
Yes, yes. And 2012 Sandy was about 36 billion USD, so that's about 154 billion ringgit.
So, okay, well, you know, is there, in terms of stocks for these insurance companies, have there any kind of impact?
Yeah, so basically, insurance has an exposure whenever you have a catastrophe. However, what's interesting about this particular catastrophe is the fact that less than 30% of the cost of all this damage was actually insured. So, actually, the impact to insurance is far less than originally estimated. However, insurance stocks fell broadly. AIG fell 0.8%, Berkshire Hathaway fell 0.5%, and Chubb Limited fell 1.3%.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.